listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Disaster for Jose Mourinho's Chelsea as a key goal for Sunderland in extra time gives the Black Cats a big win in the League Cup. Leicester City are slaughtered by Manchester City as a final away win comes for Pellegrini's men. In the World Club Cup, Bayern Munich sweep past Guangzhou with Ribery, Mandzukic and Götze providing the firepower to push the Germans into the World Club Cup final. Welcome to Wednesday's edition of World Football Daily. I'm Oliver, the Juice Voice, and bringing the news and the many views from around the world of football. There was plenty of action in Spain in the FIFA World Club Cup last night, and of course in the League Cup. Barcelona with a 3-0 win over Cartagena, one of the standout results from yesterday evening. Villarreal beating Elche, Malaga drawing with Osasuna in the second leg of their game. Real Madrid are in action tonight, and surprisingly, very surprisingly indeed, the Spanish press is actually getting a little worried that this could be a very difficult game for Los Blancos, because in their last outing against Olympique de Zatavia, they ended up drawing just 0-0 away from home, away from the Bernabeu. And Madrid and the Spanish press are starting to worry about this fantastic run of form that Olympique have been in at the moment. They're on a 9-game run without conceding. And with Carlo Ancelotti apparently ready and set to put the youngsters in once again, to give them a second chance after they failed to dispatch of Olympic in the last outing in the Copa del Rey. There is some worry that a slip up tonight and Madrid do need to score tonight, the Olympic could end up going through, and that Los Blancos could be out of the Copa del Rey before we've even got to the point where anybody from Madrid or Barcelona starts to take it seriously. Would be a disaster for Ancelotti. Yes, it might mean that they'd be able to focus a little bit on more on Ledesma and the league, which both need to be looked at a little more carefully. Actually, this kind of ties up well with something I read earlier in the week about Madrid are also a little bit worried about their tie with Schalke, because they don't have a great run of form of playing in Germany. So there's quite a bit of negativity being said about these games that normally you would you'd pit Real Madrid against Schalke and you kind of say, hey, that should be simple. And same with the Madrid against Olympic tonight. People should be saying, this is going to be easy for Ancelotti and his boys. They should going to coast through this one. But instead, people are just a little tense about this. And it does seem that there is negativity seeping in the attitude around the Bernabeu. I'm sure they're going to sweep past it tonight. Let us know whether you think they are going to or not. Showworldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line, the Facebook page as well. Should Madrid be struggling against Olympic and Schalke in their Champions League and Copa del Rey ties coming up? Of course, plenty of time to wait for the Champions League to resume as it returns in February. And of course, the Copa del Rey action tonight for Los Blancos. Other games see Atletico Madrid take on Santander, Betis taking on Ledia Esportiu, Sociedad take on Algeciras, and Sevilla take on Racing Santander. We've also got the World Club Cup fifth place tie between Al-Hali and Monterrey, and the semi-final between Atletico Mineiro and Raja Casablanca. League Cup action as well, Sunderland dispatching of Jose Mourinho's Chelsea, a weakened Chelsea side, not a first-team effort from Jose Mourinho last night. getting the lead after 46 minutes with a Lee Catamore goal. But Barini with another late strike. Remember that late winner he scored against Newcastle, that fabulous effort a few weeks back, well, about a month or so ago now. Adding another goal thanks to Josie Altidore's assist. Nice to see Altidore getting a little more involved in that side. But it was, as I say, a half-strength, kind of second-choice Chelsea side. Azpilicueta in there, Obi Mikel, Kevin De Bruyne, Schürrle playing out wide, William just behind Eto. I mean, it should easily have been able to deal with Sunderland and Gus Poyet's team that he put out. Browner, Shea, Gardner, Johnson, Catamol, Larsen, Gaikarini, Altidore. You know, plenty of quality in that Sunderland side, but you would have thought the amount of money that Chelsea spend and the squad depth they had, they would have been able to get through. Instead, it went to extra time, and it was all down to Sung Yung Ki's strike 2 minutes before time, set up by Barini, that gave Sunderland a big win. City getting through thanks to a fantastic strike from Kolarov and, of course, two goals from Edin Dzeko in that 3-1 win against Leicester City away from home last night. We're going to avoid the Premier League for the moment at least, and avoid Spain for the moment at least. And we're going to take a trip down to across the channel for myself and go down to France to talk a little bit of Ligue 1 football and, of course, PSG's draw in the Champions League and the French sides in the Europa League as well. I'm delighted to say that we have a very big PSG fan and a top-class French football reporter joining us on the line now, ready to have a chat about all things Ligue 1. He is a wonderful fella. We do enjoy having him around this, around at World Football Daily and on our airwaves. And I'm delighted to say that joining me now on the show from ESPN FC, French Football Weekly, and the voice of PSG TV, it's Mr. John Legos, John Legossip Johnson, joining us here on WFD. John, mate, pleasure to have you on the show, man. How you been?
I'm very well, thanks, mate. And yourself?
Very well indeed. We're all in the festive spirit at the moment here at World Football Daily. I'm hoping you're sat there in Paris with a Santa hat on as you speak to us right now.
I am indeed. I've got my Christmas sweater on as well.
Oh, fantastic. Is it one of those like really awful ones that everybody, including Premier League footballers at the moment, seem to be think is the current fashion for this time, like with a big Christmas pudding on it or something like
that? Yeah, it's like red knitwear with a reindeer on the front.
Very nice, very sophisticated, my man, I have to say. We will talk about your dress sense some other time, and I will shake my head disapprovingly at this point, but we will get into some of the news coming out of Ligue 1 at the moment, in particular obviously the big draw on Monday for the Champions League knockout stages. And what's been the reaction from PSG to their tie? Because it's not as bad as it could have been taking on Bayer Leverkusen, but it will still be a difficult job to go to Germany, and they're a side that have been in pretty decent form so far this year.
Yeah, I think everybody in France was quite happy with the draw, very pleased to avoid the likes of Manchester City and Arsenal. I think some people were actually hoping for what they saw as an easier draw than Bayer Leverkusen, you know, getting the likes of Zenit St. Petersburg or Galatasaray. But I, you know, I'd reason that Galatasaray wouldn't be an easy draw given the state of the pitch when Juventus weren't there a week or so ago. So I think everybody's quite happy at drawing Bayer Leverkusen. And the main objective really going into the draw was just to not get drawn against the likes of Manchester City. But no, like you said, it's still not going to be a straightforward game against Bayer Leverkusen, a very good side, particularly domestically. They perhaps haven't shown it as much on the European stage, although did qualify as you know, as worthy runners-up in their group. But I think PSG need the step up in competition. They got a little complacent towards the end of their group, started off very very well. First three games, you know, destroyed the likes of Olympiacos, Benfica and Anderlecht. And then going into the home game against Anderlecht, where they could have had the group sewn up and they would have been able to rotate the team twice instead of just once, as it ended up. You know, I think they assumed that the hardest work was already done, and that's when Anderlecht surprised them. So they definitely need this step up in quality. For me, I think the most ideal draw would have probably been AC Milan. You get that mixture of glitz and glamour whilst it's still a very winnable match on paper. But I think that they can be very happy with Bayer Leverkusen, and it's definitely going to challenge them more than their group stage did.
Is that something that it generally could affect PSG in any tournament that they're in at the moment? That complacency of when the smaller sides play them, the because they are so far ahead from the majority of the teams in Ligue 1 right now. Of course, Lille and Monaco still pushing them at the moment, but aside from that, there's nobody else that you could see could pose any sort of a threat to them. And similar in Champions League football, it's still quite new and fresh, and so to keep an intensity to those games is important for a side that maybe it doesn't have that experience yet in Champions League football.
Yeah, I definitely think so, because I think there's certain players in the team who have plenty of Champions League experience. You've got the likes of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Thiago Silva, Edinson Cavani's come into the team. You know, he's no stranger to Champions League football. But you also have newcomers, the likes of Luka Dean. I mean, he's not new completely to Champions League football, but a lot of these players, in terms of playing together on this stage, you know, have never played before. And I think that's where the players from last season's campaign, you know, will sort of benefit the team now, whether or not they're still in the starting lineup or not, because some of those players will have been there and done it already, going to the quarterfinals last year under Carlo Ancelotti, playing Barcelona, not losing in either game, and only just going out on away goals. I think they'll, you know, reflect on that experience last year, in preparation for these games against Bayer Leverkusen, and I think there's definitely enough talent to reach the semi-final, perhaps even the final in this team. It's just a question of how far their chemistry will be able to take them, because, as you said, complacency does become an issue. I'm not sure it will become an issue against Leverkusen, and then after that you'd assume that PSG are only going to face harder teams if they can get past the Germans. But In the league, yes, complacency does become an issue sometimes. We have PSG on the verge of you know, breaking a couple of records in the last couple of weeks. They lost out on the opportunity to do that now with a surprising defeat away at Evian a couple of weeks ago. And now there's there's less pressure on PSG because of not having these sort of the chance to break these records weighing down on them. They don't have those sorts of opportunities sort of weighing them down in the Champions League. So I think we'll see less of that complacency now in Europe, but perhaps conversely we might see it a little more in Ligue 1 as we continue the season. But at the moment, they haven't shown it all that often. They're still 2 points clear in the league, doing very well in the Champions League, topped their group. So I don't think complacency has become too much of an issue just yet for Laurent Blanc's side.
Do you think that that loss against Evian almost came at the right time? Yes, you know, they were, as you mentioned, they were close to breaking records, French football records, and would have been wonderful for them to do so. They're a team obviously that are playing so well, and you would have expected them to get past Evian. But having that kind of slip up before the Christmas break, just or the league's Christmas break at least, it stops that complacency kind of breeding in over the downtime in Christmas. Nobody will be sat there thinking, well, we're almost untouchable here at Christmas time whilst they're enjoying a slight rest from the league.
Yeah, I think it probably did come at the right time. I think you could argue it would have been nice for the team to break the club record of invincibility, but I think perhaps breaking the record held by Nantes that was set back in 1994-1995 of 32 games unbeaten, I think it perhaps would have probably sowed that seed in their mind where they think that it doesn't matter how they play when they're on the pitch. Just these teams just aren't going to be able to beat them because of the sheer quality that PSG can now boast in their first choice 11 and arguably their second string. And I think not having the pressure on them to, you know, to break all of these records is going to be beneficial. I just think it would have been nice to be able to break their own club record as a sign that, you know, this is the strongest team that PSG have ever had, because I believe that it is. Even though they had the golden era of the mid-90s, I think this team has potential to do things that side were unable to do. And I think that them breaking that record would have encouraged them to, you know, to really try once again to break the Nantes record, but both of them are still up in the air for PSG to try and get, and I think that's what they'll try and do over the second half of the season.
Now, I've seen, John, that Laurent Blanc's got himself in a little bit of trouble after a reaction to a question in a press conference basically patronising a female journalist, saying, oh, you do know what 4-3-3 is, don't you, love, kind of thing. What's going to be the fallout from this? It's never obviously good to see kind of sexist attitudes in football, and there are plenty of broadcasters that have paid their price over the last few years for such attitudes. I mean, will this be kind of overlooked against Laurent Blanc, or will people come down quite heavily on him, do you think?
Well, the interesting thing is that this is not really receiving that much coverage in France at the moment. Nobody's been talking about it. I think actually I've seen more articles in the English press about it than anywhere else. I think it's, as I understand it, it's not the first time the two have had a run-in and a similar exchange. I think it happened as well once when Laurent Blanc was in charge of the French national team. And then obviously you had the race quota scandal that he was also embroiled in. So he's not a stranger to being caught up in these situations, and he manages to get out of them a lot of the time. I don't think it's enough to cost him his career or his job at PSG. I think plenty of people will make a lot of the timing, the fact that Andrew Villas-Boas, the candidate who was believed to be PSG's choice ahead of Blanc, who eventually rejected the opportunity to come and coach the team in the summer, is now available, and people are wondering whether enough of a storm will be kicked up over this for Blanc to be dismissed and for Villas-Boas to come in. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that, if anything, it might affect the proposed contract PSG are intending to offer him that would have been signed before Christmas. Perhaps now we'll see that come into play later on in the campaign. But I don't think it's going to be turned into as big a furore as people are making it out to be for the moment.
Do you think there is a chance that AVB could come in? That we know there's this option on Laurent Blanc's contract to be extended by another year into next season. But with AVB gone, he was a choice for PSG, but at the same time, hasn't succeeded at either Chelsea or Tottenham to an extent, and everybody's got their opinions on the reasons for that. Would PSG still be interested in someone like AVB? It would almost be like failing upwards if he did, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think it would be, and I don't think PSG would be interested at the moment. I think they'd be mad to part company with Laurent Blanc, these recent comments aside. I think that Blanc has shown himself to be more than capable of leading this side. He's tactically innovative. He's got them playing in a style that Carlo Ancelotti was just never able to do. In fact, he's got them succeeding in a formation that Ancelotti tried to get the players to play in and just wasn't able to. So there's so many reasons to be positive about Laurent Blanc. I don't think that PSG will now be looking forlornly towards Andrew Villas-Boas and think that he's still a better candidate than Blanc. I think Blanc is the right man for this team, and I don't think many people would have predicted that they'd have been saying that at the beginning of the season, just after he'd been appointed. But he's won so many people over, not just with the style of play, but the way he handles the team, the way he rotates the players, gets the best out of everyone. I mean, you could argue that he's still perhaps not getting the best out of some of the peripheral players like the Jeremy Menezes and the Javier Pastores of the side. But I think, for me, Blanc is now the closest thing that PSG will be able to get to Arsene Wenger. They were desperate to try and prise Wenger away from the Emirates Stadium. I think it's obvious that that's now never going to happen. For me, even if it happened tomorrow, I think it would be too late in Wenger's career to come to PSG and really make the sort of impact that he'd want to make, because the changes that he'd be keen to implement would take the best part of 5 years to really come to fruition, at least. And I think that Laurent Blanc is PSG's best chance now of managerial stability over the next couple of years, and being able to couple that with success, not only in France, but also on the European stage as well.
As we're approaching, obviously, the January transfer window, and Jonathan, I do want to talk about both PSG and Monaco and potential changes there. But I want to ask you about Lille, because I think we do stay, especially because you're such a fan of PSG, very focused on them when we talk to you about French football. Lille, on the other hand, this is a side that's only scored 20 goals in its 18 games this season, but it is winning its games through just stern defence. And when we saw them at the start of last year, this is a shadow of the side that was falling all over the place and struggling so woefully at the back. This is an incredible turnaround for this Lille side. Is it as unexpected as kind of we're thinking here at WFD?
I don't think it was unexpected that they'd be harder to beat. I think one of the One of the things that René Girard prides himself on is being able to construct teams with very, very solid defences. And I don't think it's any surprise that other teams have looked at the way that Marseille managed to finish second in the league last season by winning most of their games 1-0. And have then tried to replicate it. I think the thing that surprises most people about Lille is the fact that they lost so much star talent over the summer. Yeah, the likes of Florian Thauvin didn't even play a game for Lille and then transferred to Marseille. That was a real surprise. And then you've got some more unknown players that came into the squad. And you've got the likes of Simon Kjær, who was brought in after some disappointing spells in Germany, and then his second coming in Italy didn't work out as well. And I think for me, it's a product of the team going into the season with very few expectations and also being led by a very astute coach in René Girard. You know, he's very good tactically, led Montpellier to the title 2 years 2 years ago on a shoestring, basically. And I think he and arguably Vincent Enyema and the two central defenders this season, Marco Bascher and Kjær, have been the main reasons for this Lille's team's success. I mean, as you mentioned, they're not scoring that many goals. Salomon Kalou is never going to be a prolific goal scorer. He's not going to get you into the 20s. He did very well getting over 10 last season. He's not an out-and-out goal scorer, and that's arguably what Lille lack, and that's why they won't challenge for the title. They're in third at the moment and looking very good for Champions League qualification. But I think that, for me, the main reason for this success is Enyema, because he was brought in by Rudy Garcia, told that he wasn't going to be first choice goalkeeper for the team, was allowed out on loan to Israel, and then came back and has now made himself the undisputed number one for Lille. And he looks an outstanding goalkeeper. And what amazes me the most is just that he's never sort of had this recognition within Europe, at least not until the astounding run that ended a couple of weeks ago at Bordeaux that could have seen him break the all-time clean sheets record in Ligue 1. So for me, I think Girard is definitely one of the reasons for Lille's success. But you've also got to pay credit to Vincent Enyema and Marco Bascher and Simon Kjær. Bascher in particular is a very, very underrated player in Ligue 1.
Who would you take then? Because I noticed French Football Weekly has been raving about Sirigu at PSG. Who would you rather have, Enyema or Sirigu, in between the posts?
It's difficult because both goalkeepers are very good. Sirigu is an excellent shot stopper. I think he's perhaps questionable in terms of his aerial ability, and I think he prefers to catch the ball to punch the ball rather than catch it at occasions, and that it does get frustrating every now and then. I think Enyema is a better all-rounder and perhaps more reliable, but Sirigu has also been excellent for PSG, so I don't think they have any reason to be unhappy with the Italian in goal. I think the worry for Lille would be another big team, perhaps not in France but somewhere else in Europe, looking at Enyema and thinking that they can prize him away with a reasonable offer of, say, I don't know, 5 million euros, maybe a bit more, between 5 and 10. He's recently signed a contract extension until 2017, and if he stays until the end of the season, I think there's a good chance that Lille are going to be qualifying for the Champions League.
John, moving to Marseille quickly as well, all changed while Alibaba gone a week or so ago, and Jose Inigo, the caretaker manager at the moment, are we going to see any other changes? Is Inigo going to be given the opportunity to carry this through to the end of the season before another manager is brought in, or are there plenty of names springing about the place at the moment in French football for somebody to take over this role?
Well, there have been a number of names linked with the post, and I think the most interesting coach to have been linked with Marseille is actually Marcelo Bielsa. I think that would be an excellent pickup for Marseille. He played some fantastic football at Athletic Bilbao. In fact, there are some fans of the Basque club that still long for him to be in charge because of the style of play that they had. And I think that he'd be an excellent appointment for Marseille. What I think is going to happen is that Enyema will be in charge of the team up until the Christmas break, and a decision will then be made on the coach going into the future. Marseille are a team with excellent potential. There's some very good, talented players there. I think their exploits in the transfer window last summer were perhaps a little uneven. They should have probably invested more in the defence and less in the same sort of players going forward. You've got the likes of Tovan and Payet in the same side, two very similar players. And I think that to get the best out of them, you arguably play one or the other, and you can't also accommodate the likes of Imbula, who was also brought in the midfield, as well as Mario Lemina, who arrived from Lorient. And I think now, looking ahead to the January transfer window, the first priority is to bring in a coach and a big name if possible. I've noticed that André Villas-Boas has said that he'd love to coach in France, and for me that would be a very interesting appointment, because I think it's a club with great potential, especially once the stadium is finished being built. I think arguably if any other big money investors were looking at the success of Paris Saint-Germain and the potential success of Monaco, they would look at Marseille and think there's such great potential there to build a team that can go on and enjoy success in Europe, that, you know, they might be ripe for investment. But until that happens, I think that Marseille could still attract a high caliber of coach. It just depends on how much money they're prepared to invest in it. I can't see Anigo sitting out the season in the dugout. I think they will definitely go for somebody else to come in and replace him, probably before the season gets underway again in January. But the big question is the investment going to be forthcoming in order to attract somebody to the club, or are they going to go for the sort of cheaper domestic option?
Just finally, Jonathan, because we need to wrap things up, but I am desperate to talk to you quickly about the potential changes in the transfer window coming up in January. We're so close to it. Monaco, will they keep hold of Falcao? There's so many rumours still flying around about that. And are we going to see any more big moves from the big two in terms of players coming in, do you think, into France?
Yeah, I think we can definitely expect to see a couple of moves. It wouldn't surprise me to see Monaco make an early move for Eliakim Mangala from Porto. I think they've got an obvious hole in their defence that they need to fill. And for me, Mangala would be the obvious replacement. You've got the likes of Ricardo Carvalho and Eric Abidal there. Two solid players with excellent levels of experience, but starting to show their age now, and they're looking a bit creaky at the back. The signing of Nicolas Isimat Midin hasn't worked out. He arrived over the summer from Valenciennes. There's potential for him to perhaps be loaned out come January. So I think there's definitely scope for Monaco to be in the market for a defender. So much of what they do in the transfer window, though, will depend on Falcao. He's saying the right things and that he wants to stay at the club and that he's very happy. Claudio Ranieri, too, saying that he believes Falcao is happy in Monaco, happy with the team. And he's just giving him time to get over an injury that was supposedly picked up on international duty with Colombia. I don't think we'll see Falcao move in January. I think there's too much for him to lose personally, and the club can't afford for their project to be undermined so early on by losing a player of Falcao's calibre, despite how much money they could make in a potential transfer fee. In terms of whether we see any other additions to the big two, I think PSG will be in the market for a creative midfielder. It wouldn't surprise me to see them go back in with another bid for Juan Mata. They were unsuccessful towards the end of the summer transfer window. I think they'll definitely go back in for him. Perhaps the likes of Johan Cabaye. There's also whispers that they will try to make an early bid for Paul Pogba in order to keep him out of the clutches of Real Madrid. So much of that, though, will depend on what happens with Blaise Matuidi's contract situation. There's a bit of a dispute going on between his current agent, Mino Raiola, and his former one, Jean-Pierre Bernays. Once that gets resolved, Matuidi will sign a new contract with Paris Saint-Germain that's been on the table since the summer. But the longer this goes on, I think people are now starting to get a little bit worried that he might be poached by another team on a free transfer before they can get this matter resolved. And if that happens, then I think we'll definitely see PSG making a move for Pogba. But assuming that Real Madrid don't make a bid, then I think we'll see PSG wait until the summer.
Plenty of changes then for Monaco and PSG. I'm sure you'll be putting a big smile on Monaco fans' face, though, with your prediction that Falcao won't be leaving. We'll be talking about him later on in the show today. But for now, Jonathan, a big thanks to you for joining us here on World Football Daily, mate. We always appreciate you taking out some time out from your day to join us. And I'm sorry I've taken up so much of your time as well, man. But it's a pleasure to chat as always, and have a very good Christmas and a happy new year, mate.
Not a problem, Ollie. Same to you and the guys as well. Have a great Christmas, happy new year, and I'll speak to you in 2014.
We will catch up in 2014 indeed, Jonathan. Take care, mate, and have a very good new year. Jonathan Johnson there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things French football and giving us the lowdown potentially on some ins and outs from PSG and Monaco. The French Liga title race, there are three teams separating themselves from the rest at the moment. Bordeaux, though, maybe out of the Europa League, but they are 9 points in that UEFA Cup spot behind Lille. PSG top, Monaco 2 points behind, and Lille just 4 points behind PSG. Lille with that stellar season, conceding just 6 goals so far this year. Absolutely incredible. Gangamp, unfortunately, slipping out of that top 10. We had a cracking game, Lyon against Olympique Marseille on the weekend as well. If you can check out the highlights of that, I'd definitely take a look. We were predicting, and we were talking about that last week on the show with Andy Brassel, about how big a game that used to be, and Lyon taking a 2-0 lead in the first half, and then Gignac and Davayen coming back for Olympique Marseille away from home to grab a 2-2 draw. Elie Balp, of course, removed as Marseille manager, and at the moment, as we were saying, a temporary interim manager down there in the south of France with José Anigo, the caretaker manager for the moment. Caretaker manager, so it's a very peculiar term, isn't it? You know, I guess in the US, would you call them a janitor manager? Janitor manager? I don't know. But once again, big thanks there to Mr. Jonathan Johnson for joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things PSG, of course. You ever get the feeling, Raf, that Jonathan has that slight bias when he talks about PSG? Because, you know, he is a PSG fan. He's told us before that he's a PSG fan. And I just wonder if, you know, I do like it when we get our guests kind of being slightly more biased. I mean, Giancarlo does it, especially when we talk about Fiorentina. It is nice to get that fan coming through when you talk to these guys, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And I know that there's a bias there. And if I'm almost positive we probably have that recorded somewhere on archive in the vault at World Football Daily. Yeah, but I appreciate that. Again, I think that that's kind of what drives this show. We are a fan-driven show. This is the fan side and the fan's perspective oftentimes. And I mean, that's what, you know, it's a passion that drives the game, Juice, and I think that's a good thing.
It's of course it is, man. I mean, without sounding corny, but the fans make football what it is, don't we? So without us, football would be nothing. And it's nice to get, as I say, our journalists coming through with a slight fan bias every so often. And you can always forgive people of that, because, you know, you do get a very blind bias when it comes to your team. For instance, I tonight, rather than investigating any other world football, will be finding a place to sit down and enjoy Sheffield Wednesday against Wigan in the Championship, because that's what I am, a football fan. Raf, let's move away slightly from top flight football and whatnot. There's something I sent you links today to, Samsung Galaxy's new advert on TV, the internet, whatever. Samsung's Galaxy 11, where basically, you know, I've been calling for great football adverts to return.
True.
And we've had some decent ones in the last few weeks. I mean, the Bwin one that was we were talking about yesterday with the Bayern Munich guys playing basketball. You know, that's entertaining. There's not much of a, like, storyline to it like the Nike ones, but, you know, it's entertaining. Samsung have gone the complete other way, and they've tried to create this, like, epic storyline, like movie style almost. I mean, if a TV advert starts with aliens have come down from space and challenged us to a game of football, and that's like one of the opening lines in the advert, you know this is going to be a pretty weird off the ball kind of thing. And you get watching it, and basically what happens is you find out these aliens have come down, they want to play us against football, so Franz Beckenbauer goes off to find the greatest players in the world on Earth to challenge these aliens to a game of 11. Now, there's some things that I've actually kind of watched this and immediately started to kind of tear it apart with how kind of frustrated I am by the whole advertising campaign. All right, let's start with a couple of things. Firstly, Messi gets given the captaincy at the very beginning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the last player to come in to be told, basically these kind of secret agent looking guys go around the world picking up all of these players from wherever they are. Like Victor Moses and Oscar are in a bar playing darts in London. Rooney's playing, is sparring and boxing, you know, things like that. And the last player to get brought in, you know, Messi's the first, gets given the captain's armband, and then these two secret agent looking guys go up to Ronaldo whilst he's playing like five or six girls at volleyball, and he's kind of just teeing the ball over the net and they're firing it back at him, and they say, hey Ronaldo, you know, come on, we're going. Now, first and foremost, I can't imagine any point in time where Cristiano Ronaldo would turn around and be so willing to play under Lionel Messi as Messi is his captain. First and foremost, I mean, that stood out for me. We know that these guys have such a kind of a great competitive rivalry going on. I just can't see Ronaldo being sat there going, oh yeah, Messi's my captain, no problem, I'll join. I could imagine him wanting to be like, well, you know, friends, like, I'm probably going to win the Ballon d'Or here this year. Surely you should be giving me the armband, not old 5 foot five Barca tiki-taka Messi. I'm Cristiano Ronaldo. Look at me. So that kind of, you know, first little thing. Second little thing was a couple of these guys, I had to go and check who they were, such as Wu Li, who is at one point, he's kind of brought in. He sat there meditating in a Chinese garden and the ball is like floating in front of him. And these two kind of guys come up and like, you know, you've been selected to play for this greatest team on earth, right? Now, I know Samsung are obviously trying to do a very broad-ranging advert for the world, and therefore they want to try and include people from kind of and players from all over the globe. Totally get that. But, I don't know, Shanghai, East Asia's, you know, 151 appearance, 64 goals, Wu Li isn't somebody that people would jump, like, that name doesn't jump out at you for, you know, a World 11 kind of thing.
I'm pretty sure that there's a replacement for Wu Li and this other guy who I still have yet to find.
Lee Chung-yung.
Yes.
Yeah, Lee Chung-yung is South Korea's player. I recognized him. Actually plays for Bolton Wanderers here in England. But again, you want a World 11 and you're bringing in a guy that plays in the championship, like, you know, I know Beckenbauer's getting old here, but like, switch on a little bit, friends. You know, I don't think we want championship caliber. If it's a fate of the world playing aliens, I don't think we want championship Bolton Wanderers players getting involved. And what annoyed me about Lee Chung-yung's kind of part in it is that he and Mario Götze get called up at the same time, and they're both kind of on a moor somewhere playing, doing clay pigeon shooting, where somebody's kind of firing the clay pigeons out and they're hitting them with footballs. But how unlikely is it that Mario Götze and Lee Chung-yung like hanging out together? Now, obviously, I don't know the ins and outs of Mario Götze's social life, nor do I know the ins and outs of Lee Chung-yung's social life. But
dude, they're big game hunters, man. They spend plenty of time practicing.
Well, I just can't imagine these two guys hanging out being best mates. Can you? I mean, does?
Of course, man. I know this. I know this, Juice. I know what they do on the weekends when they're not playing football and it's waterfowl hunting.
I'm not buying that in any way, shape, or form. I know it's only an advert and stuff, but at least let's try and make it a little bit believable. Similarly with Kushkov and Donovan, you know, the Russian and the American hanging out together. I know the Cold War finished a long time ago, but again, you know, there's still a little bit of animosity between Russia and the US, right, Rav? So
let's bury the hatchet.
Do you think that's what they're trying to do? Samsung are trying to bury the hatchet completely by having Landon Donovan and Kushkov kind of playing together, the Zenit and the LA Galaxy players, and that's kind of like, look, our two nations are uniting under football, so go and take on the alien force. I don't know, little cheesy again. And especially, I wouldn't have Donovan in that squad. You know, I like Landon Donovan, but there are better US players out there, especially when you take into account, when you look at this side, you get Messi, Ronaldo, Kershkov, Oscar, Wu Li, El Shaarawy, Götze, Falcao. And it said, you know, Beckenbauer says, oh, you want defenders? Like, yes, bring in someone like Michael Bradley. He's a better US men's national team player if you want the US vote. And he's a holding defensive midfielder. Beckenbauer has lost the plot with his team selection for this Galaxy, Samsung Galaxy All-Star 11 advert. And he's only brought in attackers. Not only that, but do you not get the feeling that when they draft in Oscar, Oscar's there at a bar playing darts with Victor Moses. And you get the feeling that these two, like, secret agent-y looking guys, they turn up and get Oscar. And it's almost like, I guess Victor Moses is with you. I guess he can come too. Yeah. All right. I mean, you know, why would you have Victor Moses? I just don't get it. Again, nowhere near good enough to be in this all-star World 11 type thing. And when Beckenbauer says, oh, you want defenders? Oh, I'll give you defenders. And so he picks a keeper at least. Like, thank goodness, Franz. Otherwise, you know, we'd probably have Rooney in goal after his performance in that Nike advert a few years back. So he picks, who does he pick? Not a keeper that's playing well at the moment and getting regular first-team football. He picks Iker Casillas, a great iconic keeper, still a fantastic pair of hands, but not getting first-team football. I mean, come on, wouldn't it have been better for a laugh in the advert if he calls up Iker Casillas and Beckenbauer says to him down the phone, hey man, have you got Diego Lopez's number? We can't find it anywhere. We're just wondering if you could pass it on. We're looking to get the Real Madrid keeper in and he's, you know, playing instead of you. We're trying to, is that all right, Iker? Could you just kind of, I don't know. It's, you know, it's a ridiculous advert premise anyway and whatnot. And it is nice to see kind of football having a laugh with these things once again. But surely you could do it, you know, a little more true to life, so to speak. Raf,
look, yeah, I think you're being a bit harsh on this, and especially for someone who is like, you know, kind of dying to have the old football adverts back on television and really kind of, you know, putting those players on the pedestal, like the old Yoga Benito.
Yeah, but put the right players on a pedestal. You know, Victor Moses, Chung Yung, Wu Li, you know. Put Landon Donovan.
I can't think of them right now, but I'm sure that there were players in the old Yoga Benito videos that you were just kind of like, well, why was he in there?
Well, I do, as I say, I do remember like the Rio Ferdinand's team in that, which is like Ferdinand, Scholes, and somebody else. And although, you know, great players, they didn't really have like the skill in the cage adverts and stuff like that. But I'm just saying, it's because Samsung have got like the ability to go anywhere with this, as opposed to like Nike, who are restricted by, you know, players a bit more. Like Samson could have gone anywhere and offered any amount of money to these guys. So I want to see a World 11 with defenders in as well, Raf. I really as an ex centre back stroke fullback, I want to see a World 11 with defenders and not just Iker Casillas. You know, I want to, even the old Nike adverts used to have like Maldini, Roberto Carlos. You know, still big time defenders and guys that could put in a good challenge as well as obviously get forward at set pieces and whatnot
and show off some technical ability as well. Here's a couple things that I want to say. Obviously they're going to be limited by budget and generally just by the script itself.
Is that what happened when they got to Victor Moses? They were limited by budget.
Yeah. They're like, damn, you know, we splurged on Messi and Ronaldo. Where can we pick up some money? Krzysztof, Moses, who's that guy? Just get me somebody from like the championship or something. But for reals. So they're going to always be limited by budget. And because of the script, because of the idea of a World 11, and because of the idea that most people know there's a captain to a team, somebody was going to have to get paid the most. Messi got it. I think Ronnie was probably very well compensated. And in general, it's going to be okay with this whole commercial. You know, it's something fun for him, I think. So ultimately, just the marketing or advertising dollars that went into this campaign is what decided that whole factor. I doubt very much that it's going to be hurting Ronnie this year. Like you said.
No, he's not actually going to be insulted by it, but I just can't imagine if this was anything to do with real life in any way, shape or form that Ronaldo would take being second choice behind Messi.
Now, I can completely agree with you with the randoms in there, but again, I think it's just generally, you know, decided by the campaign dollars that are available. Here's some more pertinent kind of critiques or my insight into the thing, because I was really taken by this whole thing, man. I like it. I'm into this, man.
What, the alien bit or just in general?
The alien bit, it's really kind of weak in general. I mean, it's just kind of a soft backstory, if you will, that kind of drives the action of your favorite footballers on television doing some random football stuff and being badass. Now, and I think that's what they were trying to do. That's all they want to do. They just want to make these guys look badass. And here's a couple things that I noticed about the video. One, Rooney is kind of a poor boxer. I used to kind of be afraid of Wayne Rooney and I, you know, and think that, oh man, he's not somebody you really want to get in a boxing ring. But by judging off of his kind of boxing form and the way that he was kind of attacking, I think I could handle a Wayne Rooney in the boxing ring. And I'm being deadly serious. Number two, Falcao has brilliant hair. Oh, but okay. He is, his little section is a little bit strange because everybody else in the video is pretty much doing or showcasing their skills in one way or another, Juice, right? You know, using a football in some shape or form or fashion.
Aside from Rooney, who's fighting.
Right, but he's showing how tough he is, and you know, he's even excited after he gets the call because he's like, yeah, you know, I was showing how tough I am, and I'm showing that I'm willing to beat up these aliens if I need to. Now Falcao, he's not doing a damn thing. He's actually sitting there getting a tattoo that has an alien on it with a soccer ball. Now that I would be a little bit upset with, and I'm sure that it might have had something to do with a contract that, you know, maybe they don't want him, you know, exerting himself or potentially injuring himself by doing any kind of soccer-related activities. But kind of a weak section for Falcao, especially because he is a badass, man. And I think that, you know, he could have been a little cooler. And last point that I wanted to kind of, you know, just point out and critique is I've been really growing to like this El Shaarawy guy. And this video, I think, only kind of helped me. I dig the fact that he's, you know, kind of so precise with his quaff that, you know, like he comes off so precise with everything he does after that. And that really gets me excited. Yeah,
he's the best young attacking player in Italy, man, El Shaarawy. And when he gets back to full fitness, he's a boss. And only his hairstyle does nothing but to make him even better. I think aside from the immense amount of drag it probably adds to his pace. But no, I'm really looking forward to seeing him back in kind of full flow after the Christmas break. He's got back into the Milan side once again after being out for so long at the start of this season. It's going to be great to actually have him back and have him and Balotelli and Kaká working together as a front three. I am really, really looking forward to seeing those guys in full flight again. Raf, we do have to probably talk about some football news and opinions from around the place, because although it's midweek, plenty of action yesterday. We had, of course, Chelsea being knocked out by Sunderland in the League Cup. We had Bayern getting a comfortable 3-0 win in their World Club Cup round. And, of course, Manchester City smashing Leicester City 3-1 away from home. And I tell you what, a win away from home for Manchester City is no bad thing. We've still got the fallout from the AVB troubles at Tottenham Hotspur. And this is interesting. Reports today that Manuel Adebayor is going to be given almost a fresh start at Tottenham and be playing again. Tim Sherwood taking over control of the club for the moment, of the first team for the moment. Ex-Tottenham player and one of the favourites to actually carry on as a permanent manager at the club. But he's going to give Adebayor kind of a second lease on life, so to speak, at Tottenham after he's been training with the reserves and been completely left out in the cold, especially as we get down to winter, at the London North London club. Now, Adebayor has had just one start this season so far. It came in the League Cup against Coventry City. That was actually last season, sorry, he's not started this year. And his only appearance this year came in the 6-0 thumping that that Tottenham took at Manchester City back at the end of last month. Do you think Adebayor possibly, we know how much of an almost mercenary he is, Raf. We know that when he's playing almost for a contract, when he's out on loan, you know, he seems to raise his game quite a bit. Similarly, when his back's almost against the wall, when he's in trouble in some way, shape or form, when he's under pressure, he does seem to pull out games. And as soon as, like, you get to the beginning of a season, you know, he completely slacks off if he's got a permanent deal and doesn't look the same player. Do you think actually being left out of this squad for so long, he's probably going to be, do you get the feeling he's going to be quite determined to kind of show his worth once again and mm-hmm. put himself back in the firing line? And actually, AVB leaving him out for so long and this moment coming around just before Christmas, the intense Christmas period, is actually going to be beneficial for Tottenham because Adebayor is going to be so frustrated after being out for so long that he's going to take the opportunity, or you'd imagine that he'll take the opportunity to play, grab it with both hands and really kind of be going for it to get himself back playing football and earning those appearance fees and goal bonuses that I'm sure are in his contract.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, I wouldn't doubt that there's probably, you know, first team appearance fees and stuff like that. Look, he is talented, but I don't understand how he can be so hot and cold. I mean, because really it's he's either, you know, an incredible talent or he's a shit footballer. And I'm not trying to be, you know, shocking with language, but you know it's true. Like he's just kind of completely checked out when he's not on his game, and he is worse than like a warm body on the field. He is it's like playing down a man in my opinion.
But it's because he's so lazy. That's the thing. You just see no movement from him.
He wastes space. He takes up space, and it's literally like playing against another player on a team. It's like giving the other team another player because he is just that much against what you're trying to do as a team.
Yeah, it's he doesn't have great build-up play, I don't think. He's very much just a finisher at a bio. He can hold the ball up to an extent because he's big enough and strong enough when he wants to put the effort in. But we hardly saw him last year put that effort in ever.
For you, Juice. I have a question for you, Juice. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but do you think that this? I mean, I feel like he had these problems before the whole bus incident, you know, at the African Cup of Nations.
No, that's not been a factor.
This affects him. This has no kind of long term effects on him.
No, because that loan spell at Tottenham, he was fantastic. 17 goals in 32 starts. I mean, he was excellent. And that's what got him the deal at contract at Tottenham, the full-time contract, as opposed to the loan from Manchester City. So, no, I don't think that. I mean, it obviously has affected him, but I don't think it's affected his game and his attitude towards the game like that. I can't. And to be honest, we've seen it at other points in his career as well. You know, when he was on his way out of Arsenal, you know, he looked lazy, he looked selfish, he looked sloppy. And I don't think that is a reason, personally. I mean, we won't know. You'd have to ask Manuel Adebayor about that. And I'm sure only people like his shrink or something would actually know that answer. But no, I can't imagine it's been that at all. I think it's just a bone idleness to him.
Sure. Yeah. No. It's sad to see that. You know, like it's really frustrating for anybody who is. You know, a big fan of the game because, you know, especially if you play it, I wish I had the talent that he has when he's on his game. Because, you know, you'd like to think that you'd be just that much more determined. You'd be able to apply yourself that much more and reap that much more of the benefits. You can maybe also argue that maybe he's just not used to the whole professional kind of career or you know, living that life. I'm not sure.
Nah.
Maybe he's being pulled apart in 1,000 different directions at any given time by people asking and wanting and needing from him. And that's why he's just, you know, kind of checks out of his kind of his life.
Dude,
he's completely out of his mind on the field because he's just not thinking. It's like it's his getaway.
Dude, he gets full-time contracts and he seems to slip away. I need to see more from this guy. I don't think there are excuses. You go to your job and you've got to put in the effort. And I think we do just don't see him putting the effort in on football pitches at points in time. Elsewhere, Luis Suarez is set for a massive megabucks deal with Liverpool. Contract talks opening up between Suarez as they look to kind of lock him down.
Signed last year though, Juice. I mean, like again, these contracts upon contracts. It's like
this is really to ward off kind of Real Madrid and whatnot. So for January, and that is an interesting point that you raised though. Like these players sign like a 4-year extension, and then 2 years later they sign another different 4-year extension because it's seen as a because the contracts are pretty much worthless. You know, a five-year deal doesn't mean 5 years at all. It means probably 1 year, and then we'll go and renegotiate if my career's gone. If my career keeps on getting better and better, we'll renegotiate again because people will possibly come looking for me from bigger and better clubs. So your way of locking me in is to give me another five-year deal. And all it is actually is a way of a player pretty much securing the money that they're going to get over a long period of time, but also saying, okay, I'll play another year, year and a half here. But if things go well, then we're going to have to renegotiate again because somebody else will come in and want to get me. I mean, it is worth it, though, do you not think, for Liverpool to be sitting down at this point in time to renegotiate Suarez's contract to make sure that he at least he's not going in January and that they get another year out of him after that, because there was so much tension at the beginning of the year, of course, from Arsenal, from Real Madrid, and that's not really changed. Rumours that Suarez is going to be linked with Chelsea as well, although I don't buy that Chelsea would want to bring Suarez into this side when they've already got an abundance of those attacking players, and it's not really the kind of player that Mourinho goes for. We've talked about him, Mourinho, struggling with, you know, the too many creative players in that field, in that Chelsea side, and I think bringing in Suarez would just add another kind of woe to him when he looks to shore up the midfield and the defence with a bit more stability. But do you not think that it's smart for Liverpool to be doing this? Because he is too valuable for Liverpool to lose. I mean, without Sturridge, they need to have Suarez playing. With both Sturridge and Suarez, it's great. And if Suarez is gone, they can have Sturridge. But they need both those two at the moment to continue this kind of launch at a possible title run for Liverpool this year. Don't want to say it too early. We're only at Christmas. But the last four Premier League champions have been first place at Christmas. So...
I see your point, Juice. And they have been incredibly impressive. I've said it before. I do worry about what happens when, you know, Sturridge and Suarez aren't together for an extended period of time, and it should happen. It will happen. What really irritates me is you know, it's been said on the show before. These contracts are essentially just glorified autographs because they're just so easily broken and/or the money is just so stupidly spent that, or maybe I'm potentially, I guess they're worth it. Some people find that these are smart business investments to do this kind of thing. I think that if you're Liverpool and you're needing to renegotiate a contract or give a better contract after, you know, a year's worth, or after a year where you just signed a contract extension, then that probably means something's been voiced somewhere, whether that's, you know, Luis Suarez or his agent, or, you know, somebody's saying that it's a smart idea to do that. And I think that's what kind of also irritates me, because, again, it's like it's so much about what have you done for me lately. And if you are, you know, an on-form footballer who is just kind of performing at a high level, you can just hit some stratospheric heights in your career in terms of money. And it's yeah, man, wow.
I mean if you look at it from the footballer's point of view, I mean, we've spoken about MLS salaries being public, and the players actually saying we like this because it gives us that bargaining chip when it goes to renewing contracts, because they can look at what they've done in, say, the last 6 months, compare it to a player who's getting more than them, and say, hey, look, you know, X is getting this much at wherever, and I'm doing more for you than that, so I want to be earning as much money. And it is all about kind of short-termism contracts at the moment in football, because there is so much money flying around, and players see the opportunity to go out there and get paid for what they're doing in this short-term moment. I mean, you'd have thought that, like, goal bonuses and appearance fees would be the way of combating that, and it's obviously not working. They're going to have to, you know, players and managers are going to renegotiating their contracts, if, you know, every other season kind of thing at this rate. So do you not think it's just part of the monster that's already been created by the clubs who are willing to pay so much money for the services of these players anyway, and it's almost like they're kind of reaping what they sowed, so to speak?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the sad thing is that we haven't figured out a way to, you know, make all the money in football kind of make the world a better place, Juice.
No. Wow, mean, that sounds so hippie-y. It's unbelievable. I do want to... We are running out of time, Raph, but I do want to have a chat about this. It's the news that DC United looks set to bring in EJ from the Seattle Sounders, as he looks ready to depart.
It's a done deal. you're all set, man. EJ's going to DC. And I got the press release from them yesterday. I think I tweeted you this yesterday.
Oh, I didn't get no press release. I was reading the rumor mill yesterday, and I did want to talk about it yesterday, but I didn't realize that we had a done deal now. But okay, if that's the case, I mean, this is a disastrous move for the Sounders, right?
Well, from what I mean, the Sounders have been wheeling and dealing all like just insanely. Well, not insanely, just an insane amount. It seems like they've been kind of changing parts in and out. All over the place. I think they've made three or four moves already in the offseason with players. Potentially four or five. I don't know. I'll have to double check that. I don't come too overly prepared to these sit-downs, Juice. I'm sorry. I need to get better at that. But from what I read, he is definitely going to D.C., and there's still some more kind of changes, chops and changes to come at Sounders, man. I'm kind of really interested to see that. You got to think that something had to change. Something has to give. And if it doesn't go down this season, Siggy can't last much longer.
Well, do you not think though that Seattle removing some, look, we remember obviously, and we spoke about it quite a lot, the pay me kind of showing that that EJ put out, and do you not think that the Sounders have let go probably one of their top players from last season, and a player who was better than Dempsey at the end of last year, and with Martin like struggling through injury at points, really led that line for Seattle, and this is a step backwards for them because EJ was superb, not just as an attacker, but as a leader on that pitch as well. And he rode a wave with the US men's national team and the Sounders. And all he wanted was to kind of get paid for what he'd done, for what he'd been doing.
Sure.
And they were willing to splash out a load of money on somebody like Dempsey, who didn't, you know, pay back any kind of any amount of money that they brought him in for last year. And instead, they've gone and got rid of somebody who's performed consistently over the last two seasons for them. I think I think this is a disastrous move. I think it's a huge step back for them.
Unless they have a better solution coming shortly.
How can they have a better solution if there's, you know, if they can't afford to pay EJ money? How are they going to be able to afford to pay a better solution?
A better solution, somebody who is a better example. You know, you were talking about what he is to the team, a leader, or this, that, and the other. But he is an example. You know, a model of what you want in a player in terms of performing on the field, performing for your country. You know, striving for more, and you know, essentially playing at the top of your game across all competitions, really.
I don't buy this in any way, shape, or form. I think they're losing a great presence in the Seattle dressing room. We've spoken to our MLS correspondents about how well EJ's been playing for the Seattle side and has helped drag them through the final stages of the season, kind of kicking and screaming and into those playoffs. And I think losing somebody like him after these last two seasons, I mean, it's a great pickup for DC. Great pickup after their horrible year last year. You get the feeling that EJ will inject plenty of life back into that dressing room and plenty of firepower into that offense. But for Seattle, you know, when they're a side that are almost, they almost look desperate at points to win an MLS Cup now, because they've been on the verge and been kind of expected to with the amount of hype and the fan base they've got up there for so long now. And you would just expect them to kind of have done something in the last 2-3 years now, and they've kept on falling at that hurdle. Whether it's Ziggy, or whether it's through injuries, or whether it's because there's just that lack of chemistry. And they spoke about it. It's been mentioned that Dempsey coming in actually probably didn't help the chemistry in that Seattle side. And I think that this is going to do something to weaken it even more. Personally, Raf, I think losing EJ is going to be very detrimental for these Sounders. I don't know what they could. I'm not saying he's, you know, the best player in Major League Soccer and he's irreplaceable, but I think unless they're willing to spend big money, which they weren't willing to spend on him, then I don't know if they will be able to really replace that presence both on the field and off it as well.
It'll be interesting to see just all the moves that are made from Seattle. Again, they're doing some really interesting stuff already in the offseason, and I primarily think it's because they've gone and backed Siggy as much as they did already you know, at the end of the season.
Are you still convinced that it's okay to keep hold of Ziggy after not doing it in the playoffs again?
You know, man, I don't know. Like, and I kind of talked about it throughout the season this year. I just don't. I'm not sure that he has what it takes, or that he's the solution there. I think that there's something stale going on, and there's going to the manager. It takes it straight to the top, and you can really kind of make some overhaul changes. Is it too soon? You could argue that. I understand that argument. I'm leaning more towards, making the switch these days.
I think plenty of us at World Football Daily think that it's time for Ziggy to move on. Let us know your thoughts. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line, the Facebook page as well. Also, let us know if you were a football manager and you had to pick 11 players to battle aliens in the ultimate football game, what would your starting 11 be? Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line, and the Facebook page as well. This has been Wednesday's edition of World Football Daily. We'll be back on Thursday as we get ready to start previewing the weekend once again, and obviously take a look at the League Cup action and, of course, the Copa del Rey action coming up tonight. Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid both in action. Madrid a 0-0 in the first leg against Olympique de Zatavia. Will they be able to turn that around? Sevilla against Racing Santander could be a very interesting tie as well. Raja Casablanca take on Atletico Mineiro in the World Club Cup. See who will be joining Bayern Munich in that final. And in League Cup action tonight, Tottenham take on West Ham United and Stoke meet Manchester United. Will it be another dismal evening for David Moyes' men? Much like Mourinho and Chelsea yesterday, who slipped up against Sunderland. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Take care. Have a cracking day. Enjoy the football. Big thanks to John Johnson and Rafa once again. We'll see you at the same time tomorrow. Have a good day.
Sorry.